From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, October 25th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Hawaiian Shirt Friday, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and proud. Here we go. Lovely. So pretty. Truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven, for sure, for sure. All right, let's get things officially started with...
The Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets, you get to make the call. It says here, one good thing about being wrong is the joy it brings to others. Oh. Yep. Particularly millions of wives the world over.
I don't think that's funny.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
To be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool.
I'm excited.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, like that's ever going to happen. Alright, kids, it was on this day in 1854 the Battle of Balaclava took place during the Crimean War. And it was soon after when it was memorialized in verse as the Charge of the Light Brigade, which I had to memorize in the seventh grade. And it took me forever to memorize that thing. Had my dad help me with that. And then after I finally did memorize it, I didn't know how to capitalize on it. You know? Not much demand for it, you know. And it was on this day in 1962, Senator Adlai Stevenson showed the UN Security Council reconnaissance photos of Soviet ballistic missiles in Cuba. Yes, it was a big deal. And to be sure, we caught them red-handed. Pardon the pun.
Of course, you know, this means war.
Gotten to the point now where Donald Trump is holding rallies, so many of them in so many different places, I'm finding it hard to keep up with him. And maybe that's a good thing. The man has energy. My God, at his age, he's got more energy than people a third his age. And I love it. We're going to need it if he gets back into the White House. God forbid that he doesn't. But if he gets back, no, let me say, when he gets back into the White House, he's got a lot of work cut out for him. But we trust him to do it. He's got a track record of fulfilling his promises. Anyhow, he was hosting a rally on Tuesday. This is back on Tuesday. I can't believe it. Here we are, Friday, and I'm getting some audio from Tuesday. But I want you to hear this. This is an important moment in this election cycle. Tulsi Gabbard, in front of God and everybody, joined the Republican Party. And I want you to listen to this crowd. As she gets up to the podium, Donald Trump introduced her, brought her on up to the platform there where the podium was. And as usual, she gave a terrific short speech loaded with a lot of material, stuff that people can really sink their political teeth into and chew on. This gal, Tulsi Gabbard, I think is probably one of the greatest, single greatest acquisitions that the GOP has made in probably the last 50 years. I think she is that influential. When you look at this lady's resume, combat veteran of a couple of engagements, and she's still in the military, in the reserves. She's an officer. This woman is smart. She's savvy. She's cool. She has her thumb on the pulse of what's going on in this country. And she, more than anybody else right now, understands this edge of the cliff that we as a nation are standing on. We cannot let the Democrats win this election. So here's what it sounded like Tuesday when Tulsi Gabbard took the podium from Donald Trump and spoke and joined the Republican Party. But I want you to listen to the crowd and how they react to it.
Thank you very much.
Aloha. You know, I was a Democrat for over 20 years. Today's Democrat, thank you. Today's Democrat Party is completely unrecognizable, which points to the clear choice that we have in this election today. When you look at the party of Kamala Harris, for example, she is anti-freedom, she is pro-censorship, she is pro-open borders, and she is pro-war. Without even pretending to care about peace, as President Trump talked about, she has shamelessly embraced the endorsement and support of warmongers like Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney and others who care more about power and feeding the military-industrial complex than they care about you, the American people, and peace. President Trump has pledged to end wars, not start them. And this is why, in the eyes of the Kamala Harris, Dick Cheney Democrat Party, they will do everything possible to try to destroy him. You'll see how they have weaponized the federal government. They have weaponized law enforcement, the Department of Justice. They have done everything possible to try to silence him, to try to remove him from the ballot so we the people don't even have the choice to who we want to vote for. Why have they done this? Because this man has the courage to take them on and root out the deep rot of corruption in the swamp in Washington. Now, voters have made their voices heard loud and clear, not once, not twice, but three times in the last three presidential elections, nominating this man to be the Republican nominee for president because of his commitment to these fundamental American principles of freedom and peace and prosperity. USA. Now, to those of you here or those watching at home who are independent-minded people like myself, who love our country and are committed to the Constitution and to freedom, the Democrat Party has no home for people like us. But we do have a home in the Republican Party where we are welcomed with open arms by President Trump and so many of you who love our country. And it is because of my love for our country, and specifically because of the leadership that President Trump has brought to transform the Republican Party and bring it back to the party of the people and the party of peace, that I'm proud to stand here with you today, President Trump, and announce that I'm joining the Republican Party. The people, the party of equality, the party that was founded to fight against and end slavery in this country. It is the party of common sense and the party that is led by a president who has the courage and strength to fight for peace. So, as we stand here today, we have 14 days until the most historic election of our lives. And my message to my fellow Americans, regardless of your political affiliation, now is the time for us to stand together to save our country. There is nothing less than that that's on the line. A vote for President Trump is a vote for a big open tent party that welcomes people from all backgrounds and all walks of life. A vote for President Trump is a vote to express our deep love for our country and our appreciation for our God-given rights and freedoms enshrined in the Constitution. A vote for President Trump is a vote for secure borders and safe communities, and a vote for President Trump is a vote for peace here in America and around the world. I'm looking forward to casting my vote for President Trump because you are our best and only hope in this election to lead our country toward a future where every one of us can live in a truly free, peaceful, and prosperous nation. Every single vote will count. This is our opportunity to vote for freedom, to vote for peace, to vote for America, and vote for President Trump to go back to the White House and make America great again. Thank you so much.
So it's pretty clear right there where the Republican voters stand with Tulsi Gabbard, welcoming her with open arms. I don't think I've ever heard a warmer welcome to anyone than from this crowd, wherever this was. I'm trying to find out where this was, because Donald Trump is holding rallies on almost a daily basis now. And you notice he never runs out of material to talk about. All right. So when people like Sean Hannity say stuff like, "This is the single most important election in our nation's history," you, my friend, better believe it. Normally, I don't like to run long interviews, you know, playbacks of long interviews on this program, because it's only a 30-minute program. But in this particular case, I must make an exception. The other day, Maria Bartiromo on the Fox Business Channel had FCC Commissioner, Republican FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr on her program, talking about a couple of things that I think are very important regarding the information that you and I get from media, social media, mainstream media, just media in general. And in this discussion, she talks with Mr. Carr about Meta / Facebook, the CBS debacle that recently happened with the editing of Kamala Harris's god-awful interview, and they also talk about George Soros and his attempt to buy controlling interest in media giant Odyssey. Give a listen to this. Listen very closely, too, because in this interview, which is rather lengthy, but for good reason, in this interview, you're going to understand far more what's really going on in our media business in this country.
Senior Republican Commissioner on the Federal Communications Commission, Brendan Carr, accusing Facebook in an X post over the weekend of censoring information again. The fact that Vice President Kamala Harris has failed to connect even one person to the internet, despite leading the administration's $42 billion internet infrastructure plan for over 1,000 days. Facebook labeled this post as, quote, false information from an FCC commissioner, okay? They fact-checked it with the Biden-Harris administration. So then they determine it's false. That label has since been removed. And in a statement to Fox Business, Meta says this, quote, publishes clear rating guidelines for third-party fact-checkers who independently review and rate content. But in this instance, the rating fell outside of those guidelines, and so we have removed it. That means busted. Joining me now himself is the man himself, Commissioner Brendan Carr. Commissioner, great to see you. Thank you so much for being here. I want you to walk us through what happened here, because you also have an op-ed in the Journal where you talk about the $42 billion fail of Kamala Harris, the internet infrastructure plan that Harris agreed to lead, and how the Biden-Harris administration recently confirmed that those construction projects will not even begin until next year at the earliest, and in many cases, not until 2026. You write this, instead of focusing on delivering broadband to unserved areas, the administration has used the program to advance a wish list of political goals. Commissioner Carr, tell us more.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. You know, here is the information about Vice President Harris's record that both Facebook and the administration itself don't want the American people to know. In 2021, Vice President Harris agreed to lead the administration's signature $42 billion plan to connect millions of Americans to the internet. Back then, Vice President Harris said we can get the job done today. Well, flash forward to today, it's been now 1,072 days since she took the helm of this program. And as you noted, not one single American has been connected to the internet. Not even a single shovel's worth of dirt has been turned. And calling that out resulted in a now false and debunked fact check. But that's the information that the American people should be having access to right now.
So where's the money? What did they use the money for? Let me guess. They used the money for illegals.
Most of the money is still sitting there. They spent some of it hiring government workers to plan to eventually connect people. So the good news is we can still course correct here. But the problem is, as you noted, they've been pursuing progressive policy goals over the last 1,000 days. So they've adopted implementing regulations that have DEI requirements, a climate change agenda. One state broadband official that's been dealing with the Biden-Harris administration on this says that it has been a chaotic implementation environment, dysfunction, delay. Politico says it's sort of frustration and finger pointing at this point. So it's a real microcosm for some of the concerns that people have.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I said that half facetiously, given the fact that they're using money in FEMA for illegals, according to Karine Jean-Pierre 2 years ago. Look, the conservative watchdog Center for American Rights filed a formal complaint with the FCC, accusing CBS News of distortion for airing that edited answer from Vice President Harris's 60 Minutes interview. Let's talk about this for a second, because I want to show the unedited video that was used to promote the interview, followed by the edited version, which actually aired on 60 Minutes. Watch.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
That is infuriating, Commissioner. Really, when you look at those completely different answers, it's clear that the second answer was actually not even part of the first answer. I mean, they may have actually taken the second answer from a different question and just inserted it in there. What do you want the FCC to do here in terms of CBS's local New York station, WCBS?
Yeah, my SEC colleague, Republican Commissioner Symington, has been very active on this. What he's pointed out is the news distortion rule is a very, very narrow rule at the FCC. In almost every case, it doesn't apply because it could get into sort of editorial decisions that are protected by the First Amendment. But what he said is that CBS should release the transcript. And the reason why this complaint is not frivolous is because the rules say, for instance, the example we've given is if you take an answer to a question that is a yes and you replace the answer of no from a different question, that's something that would potentially fall within the news distortion rule. My position is I agree with Catherine Herridge. She was a former CBS reporter. She has said that she thinks, just as a matter of journalistic practice, CBS should release the transcript. And I think that's right. I don't think this needs to be a federal case, because I think CBS should release it. And then that would, you know, inoculate entirely CBS from that FCC complaint.
So they haven't released it. They're staying firm on that. Why not? I mean, why not just put this issue to bed by releasing the transcripts so that everybody could know where that second answer came from?
Well, that's exactly what Catherine Herridge said. In fact, she walked through a timeline that showed to be consistent with CBS precedent to do this. I think she noted that she had an interview with President Trump back in 2020 that they ultimately released the full unedited transcript. And so I think she's right, just as a matter of journalistic practice and newsworthiness, that people want to see this. In fact, I know people are reaching out to their local affiliates right now, asking them if they would release that transcript.
So, I mean, what's going on? Is there politics driving things as well here? I mean, we know the FBI has completely become politicized, the CIA politicized, even the DOJ potentially with their, you know, vows to end voter ID. What's going on at the FCC? I mean, the FCC is allowing a nonprofit group funded by George Soros to take control of radio giant Audacy after the company went bankrupt. Odyssey, weeks before the presidential election. How is he able to take over all of these radio stations right before the election? The deal effectively gives the Soros family control of 200 radio stations plus, more than 200.
Yeah, this is really concerning. This decision by the commission is unprecedented. We've never, at the agency level, adopted a fast track to approve this. We have rules on the books that would have required this Soros-backed entity to go through a national security review before obtaining these licenses. That would have taken 3 to 6 months. But for the first time ever, the commission created a special Soros shortcut. And it's concerning because I think that your last name should not determine how the government treats you. But a lot of American people have been looking at the government over the last couple of years, and they see weaponization. If your last name is Musk or another last name, you get the book thrown at you for no reason at all. In many cases, if your last name is Soros, you get streamlined treatment where you get to skip the normal review process. And I think that's the fundamental problem that so many people are concerned about.
Well, that's right. And I'm glad you brought up Musk, because it seems like Elon Musk gets much different treatment than other electric car makers. I mean, he's the leading electric vehicle maker, and yet he's not getting the same subsidies that the others get with their unions. And then remember that new speech from the Democrat FCC chair when she floated the word monopoly in context of Starlink.
Yeah, this is concerning. I mean, so look, you go back to the Trump era, we awarded over $800 million to Starlink to connect hundreds of thousands of Americans, including locations that were in Western North Carolina that ended up being hit by Helene. And the FCC back then said, well, Starlink's not really reliable high-speed internet. Well, flash forward to today. Now the private sector and FEMA are rushing Starlink kits into that exact same part of Western North Carolina, and FEMA saying it's reliable, high-speed internet. And so it's this regulatory lawfare has consequences. The New York Times just did a graphic that showed the cavalcade of administrative agencies and law enforcement bodies that are taking actions on Elon Musk that seem very disproportionate and seem like they can only be explained by politics.
Really, really discouraging when virtually the entire government has been politicized and you don't really know what's actual real and what is just politically laced. It seems like it's all politically laced. Commissioner, thanks very much for your leadership. We're going to continue talking with you along the way. Thank you, sir.
I love that line from Maria. It seems like it's all politically laced. Well, it certainly is, because if you look back on this administration going on 4 years now, virtually everything the Biden-Harris administration has done has been politically motivated, all with one idea in mind, and that is to make the Democrat Party the only party in American politics. That's their intent. And if you don't believe me, watch the shenanigans that take place after this election on November 5th. I'm hearing things like, well, it's going to be at least 2 weeks before we know who won the election. Are you freaking kidding me? I thought we had all this high-tech electronic equipment that was going to help us count the votes so there wouldn't be any doubt in anyone's mind who won. My God, using paper ballots years ago, 100 years ago, we knew the day after an election who the winner was. I don't know anybody who reads The Atlantic, but The Atlantic is a northeastern New York-based publication that's very much left-wing. And they remained in the duck and cover position a day after it issued a sensational story claiming that former President Trump mocked a soldier who was killed on American soil, with family members and veteran journalists coming forward now to rip this liberal rag for producing fake news. You know, when Donald Trump points his finger at a cluster of journalists in the back of the room at his rallies and labels them fake news, and he's backed off of that a lot, but when he labels them fake news, he's right on target. So on Tuesday, The Atlantic reported that Trump, in April of 2020, called the family of 20-year-old Vanessa Gillen. Now, she was a U.S. Army soldier stationed at Fort Hood, Texas, lost her life at the hands of a mentally ill soldier on the base. Now, she's the daughter of Mexican immigrants. And Gillen's body was discovered 2 days after the attack, at which point the Atlantic claims President Trump called her family and offered to defray the cost of her funeral. Well, Jeffrey Goldberg, The Atlantic's editor-in-chief, writes that President Trump, upon receiving the full bill, exclaimed, It doesn't cost $60,000 to buy an effing Mexican, and ordered former Chief of Staff John Kelly not to pay it. Well, that account was disputed by Gillen's sister, as well as another White House reporter there during her visit. Now, I was in the Oval Office the day Vanessa Gillen's family visited. The meeting was somber, respectful, and according to Vanessa's sister, Myra very much appreciated. Now, that was John Roberts from Fox News. If you watch Fox News, you know who John Roberts is. And he posted that on X, and he tagged Myra Gillen's sister, who has since become an advocate for support and enhanced protections for American soldiers. Furthermore, Gillen's family attorney, Natalie Kawam, accused Goldberg of lying by fabricating a statement where she purported to state that the family never received any financial support from the U.S. government after Vanessa's death. So, let me see here. All right, another quote here. After having dealt with hundreds of reporters in my legal career, this is obviously Ms. Kawam. After having dealt with hundreds of reporters in my legal career, this is unfortunately the first time I have to go on record and call out Jeffrey Goldberg at The Atlantic. Not only did he misrepresent our conversation, but he outright lied in his sensational story. More importantly, he used and exploited my clients and Vanessa Gillen's murder for cheap political gain. I would like to also point out that the timing of this story, and she put the word story in quotes, is quite suspicious, as this supposed conversation that Trump had would have occurred over 4 years ago. Why a story about it now? Good point. And she says, as everyone knows, not only did Trump support our military, he also invited my clients to the Oval Office and supported the I Am Vanessa Gillen bill, too. I'm grateful we were successful in getting bipartisan support of the I Am Vanessa Gillen Act. And because of everyone's hard work and efforts, our service members now have more protections and rights while serving our country. Yeah, you know, the politicization of just virtually everything in our country, in our society, and even in our business world has just gone completely off the rails. Here again, I've got to say, we cannot allow Democrats to take the White House again. Let's kick off the weekend by heading over to the Comedy Corner with Mark Brady.
I wasn't that smart growing up. I actually ran into my old math teacher. He taught me math in fifth grade. I recognized him immediately. I was like, Mr. Bailey, you taught me math in fifth grade. And he was like, wow, how long has it been? I was like, man, it's been forever. And he was like, no, Mark. You're 34. You took my class at 10 years old. How long has it been? Show your work. That's when you gotta get out of there, man. I did go, I went to public school growing up, and there one time in elementary school, there was a kid who got in trouble for trying to trade a Pokemon card for his friend's dad's gun. I know, you gotta catch them all, right? Just like, there's no rules, so. But I was just thinking about that, and I was like, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that situation. Watch that trade go down. Some kid's like, listen, Daniel, you give me that Charizard card, I'll give you my dad's 45, buddy, come on. And if you're ever in that situation, you always take the gun. Always take the gun. Then you got a gun, and you're like, oh, wow, this is cool. But I'm gonna need that card back. Depends on where you went to school, right? Private school, public school. That kid's going to normal college, man. I say normal college because I went to community college. Anybody do that? Okay, no one wants to say it's a one whistle. He's like, I'm not gonna tell you who it is, but I did that. Here's the reason. I don't like telling people that I went to community college. Specifically for the response I get 100% of the time. 100% of the time it's this, always. Someone would be like, hey, where'd you go to college? And I go, oh, I went to community college. And they go, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Weird, I didn't say there was. You did. Our mascot for community college was just a disappointed dad. Just
make it a terrific weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time this weekend just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?